Once they see that the device works properly, they'll release me.
I very much doubt it. You see, before you reactivated it, I reversed the polarity of the neutron flow.
You realize what will happen?
Oh, yes. Do you? First, the polarity of the neutron flow, so the TARDIS should be free of the force field now.
So he's reversed the polarity! Keep back!
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Reversing Polarity, a Doctor Who podcast where we look back through the annals of time with a rainbow lens to find all the queer subtext that has always been there. I'm Aim. Thank you, I'm proud of that one. My name's Aim, my pronouns are they, them. I am a writer and enthusiast.
I'm Rosie, my pronouns are also they, them. I am recording this on top of a stack of Doctor Who novels, as always.
As ever. And we are joined today by another special guest. Very happy to have Dominic G. Martin joining us today.
Hello there. Pleasure to be here.
It's an absolute delight. Do you want to do a quick introduction of yourself?
Yes.
For those of our listeners not familiar with you?
Of course. So, my name's Dom. I mean, you can call me Dom generally. Calling me Dominic reminds me too much of my parents.
I'm very sorry.
My pronouns are he, him. And I dabble about in various areas of the fandom. I kind of do a lot of cosplaying, I do some YouTubing, and I do acting. I like to consider myself to be a triple threat without any actual threat. So...
Incredible. And we're very glad to have you here today while we're talking about a very dramatic story.
You can say that again.
With some incredible acting throughout. The Horns of Nymon from the Fourth Doctor's run.
Yes, we are returning already to the Fourth Doctor and Romana after a one episode break or two episodes.
I think it's one episode. What were both of your experiences or like knowledge of the story before?
My knowledge of the Horns of Nymon was entirely predicated on the Doctor Who Dance Mix YouTube video, which has now been unlisted, but I did manage to find it again to link it to all of my friends.
How many Nymons have you seen today?
Three Nymons!
I was the only one!
It's a mixture of the Five Doctors when the guy goes, no, not the mind probe, and then everything that Soldeed says into a dance mix, and it's incredible.
My dreams.
Other than that, of course.
It's just perfect.
I'm sure.
That's some of the early days of YouTube. I loved it.
Yeah, it's a really, really good video. That's my entire knowledge of it. And then obviously the kind of vague knowledge that it was like a Theseus and the Minotaur thing, but unfortunately not like Theseus and Asterius from Hades, but like normal Theseus and the Minotaur.
Well, I'm just going to be thinking about Hades now then. Thank you.
Yes.
Shall we jump straight into this labyrinth?
Yes. Sorry. Let's start unwinding the ball of string as we plunge into the labyrinth.
Oh, Lord.
Yes. So, when the TARDIS collides with a spaceship en route to the planet Skonos.
Skonos? Is it Skon or Skon?
I believe it was Skonos.
Because I say scone.
Sconan.
It doesn't matter. It's like, are you from Devon or Cornwall? Do you put the jam on Skonos first or the cream?
I believe it was Skonos, the Sconan Empire.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll go with Skonos. The Fourth Doctor, Romana 2 and K-9 soon discover the horrific truth about its cargo. The ship is carrying young sacrifices for a powerful horned creature called the Nymon. But why is the creature so desperate for the delivery, and what are the dangers await the time travellers? All will be revealed at the centre of the labyrinthine power complex on Skonos.
I mean, just from that synopsis alone, it just sounds dodgy, doesn't it? A young sacrifices for a powerful horned creature. It's just a bit, well, it's very 80s, 70s, made in the 70s, aired in the 80s. It was a good precursor to what was to come.
I also just like the wording of the creature being so desperate for delivery, which is me whenever I order anything and sit by the door waiting for it.
Yeah, I got an email about a Waterston's dispatch today and I heard the door ring about an hour later. I was like, is it my book? Is it my book? It was not my book.
It's coming straight from the Amazon.
If only. But yeah, so it's an I don't think it's a bad premise necessarily to do Theseus and the Minotaur, but in the future. I don't know. I we'll get to it as we continue analysing, I guess.
No doubt.
I like that they say soon uncover the horrific truth about its cargo. The episode reveals the horrific truth about the cargo about 45 seconds in.
Yeah, just about. We see it very quickly in.
All right, shall we jump into recapping? So episode one, the glory days of the Skonnen Empire are long since past, but many of its citizens and soldiers yearn for the days of control and conquest. Always a great start. Brilliant premise.
Unsurprising.
Somebody loves the Empire. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not me.
Yay. And they're going to explain it all to us, the audience, by talking to each other in their spaceship that they both live on. Yeah.
Just one of those casual conversations where they basically recap their entire existence. Just
short
for
history,
you know,
of the world.
Yeah. Benefits.
Yeah.
The arrival of the mysterious horned Nymon to Skonnus has brought hope of imperial restoration. I think I'm saying Skonnus instead of Skonnus. My brain is...
You are. I think we're just going to have to vary it because, you know...
It doesn't matter, really. I don't think anybody's going to care.
Yeah. And if you do, you can tweet us, but nicely.
The fearsome creature lives within its labyrinth power complex and has promised to rebuild the Empire, providing it receives a series of tributes from the Skonnens and their fawning, arrogant leader, Soldeed.
Yay!
We love, I think.
We love Soldeed.
This house stands Soldeed.
A bad gay who we appreciate. This tribute is to consist of groups of youthful sacrifices from the nearby planet Aneth, as well as a supply of hemetricite crystals, thank you, with each group. Young people.
And one of the sacrifices is a Blue Peter presenter.
Okay, oh, that might be why they had the Blue Peter special on the special features on the DVD.
Janet Ellis, I think, plays Tika, and she was a Blue
Peter
presenter.
I thought she looked familiar.
Ah, that makes sense.
Not quite to the level of fame to me is Peter Purvis, but that's because I like Stephen a lot.
Young people have thus been abducted from Aneth and transferred to the Labyrinth of Nymon, into which only Soldeed is permitted to venture. On the final collection, however, the interstellar craft bearing the sacrifices breaks down in space. The ancient warcraft is simply worn out, and when the co-pilot overextends the engine, a control panel explodes and kills the pilot. So
I love that this co-pilot is only ever credited as co-pilot. They do not give him a name.
He just served his function.
But the actor puts everything into it.
I have to say as well.
The actor puts everything into this character.
On that scene as well, I love the fact that the dialogue, they use the word blundering twice. So it's from the same character, calls this co-pilot, "You're a blundering fool." And then, in the not many breaths later, "You're a blundering idiot." And I just find... I just find that imaginative bit. I can't speak. Creativity of the words. It's just fabulous.
It's okay. Characterization. Neither of us can speak either. Yeah. Soon you might get to hear going...
You might hear my rewinding noise, which is really fun.
Yeah. That was my attempt at imitating it, but it's really inimitable.
I also enjoy in that scene as everything's going wrong in the ship. You just can't hear any of the dialogue over these crashing noises.
No, that's a real issue.
Yeah.
And whilst it's realistic, it's a little bit frustrating when you're trying to follow along.
Yeah. Well, I've got the transcript up on Trekataya.net, best website in the world. It says, they cut to the cargo. It says, "The cargo are hanging on for grim death. A brunette speaks to a young man. Everyone say hi to Janet Ellis for her days in Blue Peter."
Beautiful.
It's fun.
I like how they always say everyone say hi. They had the same for Patrick Troughton's son when he was in the video.
You blundering fool, you've wrecked it! I'm not the actor on this podcast.
It's certainly interesting.
Meanwhile, the Doctor is in the TARDIS console room with Romana... The Doctor is in the TARDIS control room with Romana and K-9 making modifications to the ship. He's got the hat.
K-9.
Yes, K-9's very good. I like how he's got his hat on top of the warpy thing.
Yeah, the column, I think, probably.
It's probably.
It might have another
name.
I don't have like a TARDIS blueprint. I'm sure they exist.
Oh, they do. I'm sure some fan out there has a whole how-to document about how to work it.
Yeah. If you know what the uppy-downy thing in the TARDIS is, tweet us, but nicely.
Well, the really important thing is that we know where the fast return switch is because it's written on it in Sharpie.
So various controls are disconnected. Unfortunately, the area of space he's chosen to materialise the ship in is perilously close to what seems to be the basis of a manufactured black hole.
Very exciting. Yeah. It's the gravity starts to increase, and Romana and Four are like, well, there's no planet, so what is causing the gravity? And they eventually land on the idea of a black hole. Is this the bit where he gives Canine mouth to mouth, or is that later?
No, this is the bit. I thought it was this bit, yeah, because I remember he goes and checks the control, suddenly there's a boom, and then it cuts, and you see K9's neck is inexplicably broken. And it's
Oh, God.
It's just pointing upwards, and I'm like, what? I had to rewind it when I watched it, because it's like, hang on a second, did it turn? Or it just, they really thought they could get away with that, huh?
Yeah. I guess they did.
Yeah.
I must say, K9, I do like K9 in this story. I really miss John Leeson. I miss him very much.
Yeah, I mean...
it's just weird.
David Brearley did a good job, but at the same time, he's not really as good as John Leeson, who's just quintessentially associated with K9.
Yeah, it's like... You know, because in Destiny of the Daleks, they say about him having laryngitis. Apparently, he just had laryngitis the entire season.
Yeah, which is...
it is a tough illness to recover from.
Yeah, it is a tough illness to recover from. I don't know. I mean, presumably, when he comes back at some point in the future of the show, he'll have had laryngitis again, or throat spiders, or something.
The TARDIS is in danger of being drawn into this black hole. The Doctor extends the TARDIS door force field to a nearby spaceship, the Skonan battlecruiser, and he and Romana board the aging warship.
Incredible, both model shot and special effect shot here.
It's like they're walking through a diagonal line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, the model shot is not the best because they don't have any stars in the background, so it's just hanging against
That's intentional. The black There's backdrop. No stars because it's meant to be in the black hole.
I know
hole.
It's intentional. I know it's intentional, and yet it doesn't work, and it looks bad.
The 90s, yeah.
There's no visual indication of the black hole for, like, ages. It's, like, not even to the level of, like, in The Three Doctors when they've got, like, the big black hole on the screen, and it's just jaggedy.
Yeah, there was nothing. There was nothing.
But I did deeply enjoy the corridor force field.
Oh yeah!
Like, well, we can't stay here because we've got no shielding and we've got no dematerialization because the Doctor's taken it all apart and he's got his Type 40 TARDIS manual out, which he has apparently had the whole time.
It gets referenced when he remembers it.
Yeah, maybe he got it on a trip to Gallifrey recently. Who knows?
Oh, yeah, it's
true. From the library,
picked it up after the Deadly Assassin.
Yeah.
Once aboard the Skonan ship, the Doctor notices an abundance of radioactive hermesticite. I'm never going to be able to pronounce that.
It's okay, it's not real.
However, I want to try.
Hymetricite.
There we go. Crystals.
See, I'm just not bothering, so.
That's fair.
You're making
the
sensible choice. He also soon finds a hold full of young prisoners.
Completely forgot, because obviously earlier I mentioned we find out about the prisoners 45 seconds in. It's because the co-pilot, he's like, I'm going to check on the cargo. He walks through a door, goes, weakling scum, and then walks back through the same door. That's the entire process.
Apparently that was ad-libbed.
It's so funny. It's like...
It is. It's just baseless insult. And it's just like, weakling scum! It's like, there's no need for that, buddy. Come on.
His outfit and bearing does remind me of the Marshal in The Mutants, but... not quite so bombastic, maybe.
Yeah. I also love the shade of yellow that the Anethans are wearing.
Yes. Mm. It's such a fun sacrificial outfit to be wearing. With the sensible, like, court shoe, 1-inch heel for the women.
Just looks comfortable.
Yeah.
So wide leg trousers.
Yeah.
If it works, it works.
These prisoners are from the peaceful world of Aneth, and one of them, Tekka, has a seemingly misplaced faith that another prisoner, Seth, can free them from their incarceration and defeat the Nyman.
So Seth is our Theseus figure.
Seth does not seem to want to be a Theseus figure.
He certainly does not want to be a Theseus figure. At one point he takes Four aside and is like, I'm not a prince!
Oh, Lord, poor guy.
So I guess Tika's meant to be, like, kind of an Ariadne, but I don't think it quite works.
No, not really.
But there
we
do
have the bit where she gets a bit lost in the labyrinth.
Romana, one woman. Tika, two women. We've got our two women for the whole serial. That's our quote.
Ouch.
It's better than some. We've had quite a few of one woman episodes so far.
Yeah. I mean, last episode we did The Seeds of Death, which is a two woman serial, but both of them are great. So it stings less.
Yeah, I can imagine that would sting less than the current scenario, that's for sure.
The co-pilot investigates the hold and there finds the Doctor and Romana among the weakling scum. He takes the two of them at gunpoint to the bridge and forces them to help fix the stranded Skonan ship. The Doctor is suspicious about what really happened to the ship. Romana offers to repair the ship using a hematite crystal, close, and one is brought to her while the Doctor is permitted to return to K-9 and the TARDIS to assist from there.
Yay!
Aboard the TARDIS, K-9 informs the Doctor about the collapse of the Skonan Empire in Civil War. Thank you, K-9. Exposition
Yay.
Dog.
Yay! We love you, K-9. Sweet little dog.
Bless his soul.
Best dog. With the Skonan craft repaired, the co-pilot starts to move his ship away, stranding the TARDIS in space. With the TARDIS still not fully repaired, and the gravity increasing, the Doctor and K-9 face obliteration as a vast planetary body advances directly towards them. End of episode.
So fun.
No.
It's so fun.
There's a lot of this episode that is really enjoyable to watch that doesn't come across in the summary.
Certainly not. It's
mainly
all
in the Doctor's
in the
performance.
Yeah.
Doctor's performance, Romana's outfit, when she comes in pulling the gloves on, and you're like, oh my god!
I think I texted you as soon as I saw that saying, you're going to like this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's similar to how I texted you about Kelly in Seeds of Death.
Yep, you're right.
We've got a lesbian up the episode, as always, and mm-hmm. Romana has helped by wearing a red,
riding
what kind of
suit?
Coat is that? Yeah, like a riding coat and breeches and boots.
The gloves.
And red leather gloves.
It's,
oh my
it
god.
Looked it very magnificent. Strong. It really did.
It's enviable. Yeah.
And then within the serial, she gets to be like the metaphorical red rag to the bull because she's just pissing them off by being smart and wily and intelligent.
Yeah,
I love her so much.
She's very good.
I mean, I don't think you'll like the outfit she wears in the serial after, but. This
what Charlotte?
No, the one after that one. The one that was aired after.
Oh.
The Leisure Hive.
Oh, the Leisure Hive.
I don't think I've seen
I saw
one.
You'd done a video about that one, but I didn't want to watch it until after I'd watched
it. Oh, I
the
think
episode.
That's fair. I don't mind the Leisure Hive. I think it's actually quite a good story. But they did some stylistic choices, which I do feel underserved Romana a bit. But she is still very good in the story.
Right.
Only from a purely design. She dresses in a sailor outfit. I'll just say that.
Oh,
that one.
Oh,
that's
no, here's
iconic.
The thing is, here's the thing is that I love the sailor outfit.
I think that's
I
also
love
the
Eddie's
first
stupid outfit.
It was the first story with John Nathan Turner leading the ship, as it were.
Yeah, yeah. So. But I love the outfit that she has in later series in 18 as well, because they're just like so classy. Like she has this all like cream white suit in, I believe, State of Decay, and it's just mwah.
The good thing about the sailor suit is that the Doctor Who patent book from the 80s has a patent for it in it. So one day I'll get to fulfil my Romana dreams.
Amazing.
After you've made the Adric thing.
After I've made the Adric tunic, yes.
Oh,
and Adric. Also the Blake 7 style Adric anorak. There's a lot of excellent patterns in it, and I already made the Cybermat and the TARDIS cushion. Like a little one, so.
That's so cool.
I keep working on it.
Oh.
Right, next episode. Episode 2. Using a cricket ball strategy, the Doctor bounces the TARDIS off the approaching planetoid. This is... I love this so much.
Yeah, same. Did I say cricket ball?
When they show the TARDIS... yeah, oh, when they show the TARDIS just spinning around.
And it's very, like, early days of CGI from the looks of it.
Yeah, it's wondrous. Wondrous. Like... I don't even know if it is, because they didn't use CGI even in the title sequence until like the late 80s. I imagine this is very rudimentary, just visual effect stuff anyway.
Yeah, I believe
but
it's CSO.
But it just looks so fun. What's CSO mean?
Oh, God. That's now you're asking me. CSO is colour separation overlay. It was the precursor to the green screen. There's my mansplaining for you.
So like, is it like chroma key, or is chroma key a bit different?
Oh no, it's generally known as chroma key as well. He reads.
Yes, nice. I knew about chroma key because it's what they use. It's what they use for when Kai turns into a rainbow, like floating rainbow of justice in the mutants. For the record, Dom, me and AIM are both mutant stans, which is why.
Oh,
I see.
Because it's a good story.
It's good.
I'm such a fraud. I was just reading the first two sentences of the Google for the TARDIS wiki.
Where do you think we source half our material from?
Hey!
Where do you think we source all of our episode summaries? The Mutants episode summary on the TARDIS wiki is hilarious, by the way, if you ever want to go and look at something that's way too long.
Oh my god, the TARDIS wiki is... It's a strange sight, I have to say. There are so many strange pages on that. I believe there is a page devoted to several body parts. It's just very strange.
Yeah. There's one devoted to Iris World Times Time Cock, which is a whole thing. There's like every page that's about like there's one about racism and one about sexism, one about homophobia, and they all begin like homophobia was, and you're like, oh my god, TARDIS.
Yes. You're testing me now. You're testing me.
It's not as bad as the Wikipedia. Wikipedia is worse, but you know, that's just my opinion on fan wikis.
That is fair.
I love the internet. It's a weird space.
Yeah. So yeah, we were talking about the TARDIS spinning around. There's also some fun model shots again. Yeah. I love model shots just generally. And I like when the TARDIS is floating in space, of course. So they spin the TARDIS off of this planet that's encroaching on them at very high speeds because it's being sucked into the black hole. The Doctor then starts work on repairing the console in order to pilot the ship to Skonos. On Skonos, the Nymon is angry when Soldeed reports the Skonan craft with the last batch of sacrifices has not yet reached Skonos, and says it will withhold the arms that will help rebuild the Skonan Empire until the ship arrives. So, I wasn't expecting to see the Nymon this early in the story.
I forgot that we saw the Nymon this early on, and I also forgot the effect that the Nymon has on me, which is...
It's amazing.
Hilarity. It's a brilliant costume.
It's a great costume, but then the physicality of it is horrendous.
Very, very bad.
Yeah.
The head. The head is just...
They've always got their fingers out like they're giving the Ta'al, the Vulcan salute, and then also... They have their arms held out at an angle, and because they're all wearing these 10-inch platform shoes that they don't know how to wear, they're just plodding around. They have no natural movement whatsoever.
Yeah, it's so sad, because I really do like that, what they were trying to go for, but I don't think it turned out as well as they wanted it to.
No,
certainly not. Safe to say. I know the costume designer wanted it to be that you open it like it's a mask, and underneath is a real face, but obviously they didn't do it, so they just got big heads.
Yeah.
Really big heads.
I find them very enjoyable to watch, but as you say, probably not the impact they were aiming for.
Yeah. The cover of the novelization has a hilariously ripped Nymon on it. Like, it's got like an 8-pack.
Why? I'm glad it does, but I don't know why.
Just going to take it.
I guess that's...
Just going to take it.
Because they're basically wearing, like...
for research
for
purposes.
Personal reasons.
If you want to give us, like, a picture paints 1,000 words, but can you paint this picture with your words while you have a look?
Holy.
Please, Dominic.
Jesus Christ. This man's hit the gym.
Yeah. It's,
you know what he's doing in the labyrinth?
It's incredible, right?
Oh, my word.
Hang on. I'm going to put it in the chat so that AIM can see it. But
okay.
I didn't read it, but I was so excited just by the image.
The stance of it as well.
That is a power stance.
Could very easily be transformed into a Chuck Tingle novel cover.
I do like that they immediately ruined all that effort they put into separating the Nymon's fingers by just giving it 5 fingers again on the cover. So thank you to whoever illustrated the Doctor Who Target novelization covers. I'm in your debt eternally.
Funny.
That's amazing.
But yeah, my general decision from now on is that if a novelization is written by Terence Dix, I'm not gonna read it.
I support
I'm
that
tired
decision.
Of him. We really
don't like him.
I've heard he's kind of interesting. What have you encountered, if I may ask?
He is racist and likes the Empire.
Yeah, when we were doing the mutants, which you should watch it, Dom. Honestly, it's very good.
okay.
It turned out that he had said, "Oh, I don't think we should do this because I like the Empire and I think it's done a lot of good in the world." And you're like, "Oh,
Terrence."
Dear
God.
And there's also bits when he's talking about various political episodes of Doctor Who, being like, "Well, I never actually considered they might have any allegory for the outside world. I never read politics into science fiction." And it's like, I wonder why
Jesus Christ.
He never felt the need to do this.
He's our least favourite Terry. Luckily, our favourite Terry has never let us down ever.
Terry Nation.
We have a Terry.
Terry Nation.
Yes.
Terry Nation.
Friend of the show, Terry
Friend
Nation.
Of the podcast.
Wonderful.
We created entire lore in the last 10 episodes.
Yes, we have mentioned Soldeed now, and we completely skipped over the mention of Soldeed to talk about the Nymon. Can we please talk about Soldeed for a second?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. Yes. Imagine a pantomime villain dialed up to 11.
Yep. dialed up to 111. Like, frankly, the best, the most enjoyable villain performance we've had yet far.
In the entire series, by far.
I think so.
It's so funny and so good. Like, it suits this episode perfectly. I imagine in a more serious episode, it would not work. But in this particular story...
Everyone's playing the campiness up already, so it fits perfectly.
Yeah. You really, really need that, like, that commitment to the bit.
I recall reading that one of his last takes, you know, the you fools,
my dreams.
that was apparently a rehearsal take that he didn't know was being filmed.
Wow.
And God knows what the real one would have been like. So
that's the one where he dies in a like pile of laughter, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh my God. I'm sure we'll get to our incredibly good impressions of Sol Deed later.
It's so much fun.
Fortunately for Sol Deed, once he emerges from the power complex, he hears from his guard captain, brackets and possible love interest, (?) Sarek, that the ship has been found. Thank you, AIM, for contributing to this summary.
It's amazing. That's an
We like to leave little surprises for one another in the summary.
I love that interpretation, just thinking of the dynamic that they have outside of the show. Darling, would you go get a loaf of bread?
It's a very Melchett and Darling relationship.
Yes, that's a perfect way to put it.
Thank you. I'm really intelligent. Like comparing television shows to one another. The warship soon arrives on Skonos, and Sol Deed leads the party of greeting, being unnerved to see Romana aboard. He hasn't seen a woman in years.
Nor has he seemed to need to either.
No, he certainly hasn't. The co-pilot then lies that she is the cause of all the problems on the ship, being a pirate who stole aboard and killed the captain. Sol Deed does not believe this and then forces the co-pilot into the Nyman power complex, where he is sure to be killed. Moments later, Romana and the Anethans are loaded up with Hymetricite and also sent into the maze. How are we feeling about this maze? I love the maze.
I like mazes in general. I think it could have had a bit more visual interest.
Oh, definitely. I'm fascinated by the fact that it's clearly one corridor that they made. And then, like...
It was just of the same colour scheme as well, or the lighting style. Yeah.
Like, I actually do want to know how they made it so that it would change as they went on and off. Was it just editing or what? Different cameras?
I imagine the reason that they made it the sort of maze that changes as you go, so you don't have a same route back, is because they could edit it, and if there's any inconsistencies, they could put it to that.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, they weren't putting a lot of effort into this because they thought Sharda was going to be better, and they didn't make Sharda. So they get sent into the maze. It's like this, it's this incredible, again, like a CTO or chroma key effect, which is this big orange glowing wall that they walk through. Because that's where Sol Deed emerges earlier in the episode with great...
Which is great, because parts of his cape come out at different speeds.
Yep, and it's all perfect. Mm-hmm. It's all incredibly good. Shortly thereafter, the TARDIS materialises in the central square of Skonos and the Doctor emerges. He is taken to Sol Deed but soon escapes and heads into the power complex to escape his pursuers. Does this imply that where they are is like a city? Because I was not envisioning it as like a city.
No.
I think it probably is, but we only see about three different sets, which doesn't give it the impression of being a city.
Yeah, it feels like a very small story, which is usually fine, but they are talking about like a black hole opening up.
Yeah. That's the problem.
I think that might be why it feels so disjointed.
Yeah.
That the concepts don't match the protection.
That's the thing. Just imagine every classic Who that has a city, they only show a few sets of it. The rest of it is bloody Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah, but someone should edit that. But the thing is that some of the other sets at least like give you the appearance of it being large, right? Like Marinus, they have like it's just the same corridor sets flipped, but
and
it
there
does
are more active
big.
Extras in the background doing things, making it feel lived in.
Yeah, like getting stabbed mysteriously out of nowhere.
Yeah. Say the same with Androzani Major as well. In Case of Androzani, they have the background.
Oh my god, I have so many feelings about that. That's funny.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll get to them one day.
Oh boy.
Deep in the complex, whose walls seem to shift and change, creating various patterns of progress that all lead to the Nyman, Romana finds the husks of previous Anethans, the life drained from them. The co-pilot also arrives, still pleading for his life, and when the Nyman appears to, it dispatches the desperate soldier first before turning its mighty horns on Romana and the cowering Anethans. Thank you, TARDIS Wiki!
I just love this scene. There's so many things I love about this particular scene, because the Nyman, he comes out of his cave, he's genuinely pissed off. The voice acting is just like,
come out of my cage, and I've
literally, it's like, who dares call the Nyman?
And it's, yeah, it's,
I mean, it doesn't so work. Good. It doesn't work from like a fearsome monster perspective, but from an actual, this, you're watching this for a laugh perspective, it's like, this man has just gone out of bed. He doesn't want to deal with this shit.
Also, I want to say, because we've been talking about Hemetricite this entire time, I did like when they were when they found an incredibly shit like PVC cutout thing of that's, it's a big blue crystal basically, and Romana instantly looks at it and goes, Hemetricite. Like, I love her ability to identify rocks. It's fun.
I think she does it by like sniffing it or something.
Yeah, and then she says, yeah, Hemetricite is highly radioactive, and K-9 says, Master, I detect ultra radiation level Q7.325.
What is ultra radiation?
Exactly. Level Q7.325. Like, just say that your Geiger counter is going insane. Like,
I don't know, it's very K-9 to be very specific.
Yeah, I feel like it's weird because radiation used to be a very serious concern for Doctor Who, obviously because it was in the 60s and the Cold War and that. Like in the Daleks, it's a very serious thing. And then here, they're just like, eh, radiation. Same in Destiny of the Daleks, actually.
Don't put it too close to your face. You'll be fine.
They have the anti-radiation pills in Destiny of the Daleks.
Yeah, but it
which
still
don't seem
feels
to be mentioned
like,
at all here.
Yeah, it feels like there should be more concern about it. Because obviously, as I've already elucidated why I think that, but, you know, nuclear anxieties were presumably still present in the 1970s. I
mean, canonically, the Doctor's already died once from radiation, so...
Yeah. Crystal radiation, which is funny because in The Mutants he's like, radiation won't affect me. God. Doctor Who is so good. It's so consistent.
I love this show.
Fantastic show. Good show.
fantastic show. So yeah, that's the end of episode 2. I also like the co-pilot being a snivelling little worm, which I think is what Romana calls him.
I know. He really is, though. He just like, he tries to take a shot at the Nyman as well, and then he's like, no, have mercy! Well, technically you've attempted murder now, so all bets are off, son.
It's a tricky one. Oh my god, I forgot that he gave K-9 a little rosette for being the best dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, she's adorable.
K-9 so is the best dog. He's the good. Loveliest little dog.
I think we also missed the moment in episode 1 where Romana has her sonic screwdriver.
Yes!
Which she made and is obviously superior for the Doctor's, and he tries to swap them, and it's a very cute little moment.
And then immediately she loses it.
I love her.
Because she leaves it on the bridge, doesn't she, of the ship? Mm. Negligently. Which, to be fair, is what I do with all of my possessions.
Everything.
Like, my glasses, my phone, my keys, my antidepressants.
I've recently got a smartwatch for Christmas. Ooh. And there's a little, like, find my phone app, which pings whenever I can't find my phone.
But what if you lose your watch?
I use it numerous times a day. It's usually either on my wrist or on its charger. My phone could be anywhere.
Yeah, it's...
All bets are off with the phone.
Man, this is such a fun serial. I don't think for any merits of the script or the direction or the production, simply the acting is perfect.
And again, Tom Baker has brilliant moments throughout, great comic timing.
He's fantastic.
He's having a great time.
He's just the master in his entire last few series, I have to say. I mean, he just takes over the show. Absolutely.
For better or worse.
I mean, it's kind of, it is kind of a mixed bag into... production wise,
but his performance is so good,
except for Traken, which he was very tired.
He was grumpy.
He was very bored.
That's the thing with season 18, because he was going through a very rough time personally, because he didn't like the way the show was going, and obviously his relationship
stuff with Lala Ward.
Yeah, with Lala, and it was just not going well, and that kind of reflected in his performance. I mean, sometimes in some serials of 18, it does elevate it, depending on the scenario, but sometimes it could be really jarring and just like, okay.
Yeah. He's just being mean to a child in Trakan, really.
Yeah, yeah, which is a kind
Adric
of a show.
Deserves better. Adric sign deserves my petition.
Yes, change.org petition for Four to be nicer to Adric.
And that was just behind the scenes.
And not to get stuck in a murder castle yeah. with him.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Get eaten
Doctor
eternally.
Who, are you okay?
Doctor yeah. Who, are you okay? Yeah.
The Doctor arrives in the nick of time to distract the Nyman and thus save Romana, Seth and Tika, who make a break for it after him, though the other Athenians are too scared to leave. He leads them deeper into the complex and finds a power source close to the heart of the maze, but he needs a computer to interpret the machine and so blows his dog whistle to summon K-9. Oh, we love
yes!
K-9.
Yes! I love K-9. He goes, Master?
Like, he's so happy. I love K-9.
I can't imitate his voice, but I can do the inflection.
When the robot dog emerges from the TARDIS, it encounters Soldeed, who immobilizes it and takes it away for examination.
Tragic. Are they using its pronouns for K-9? Not approved.
Oh, disgusting.
We can edit that.
Yes. I'll get a TARDIS Wiki membership, like my Gallifrey yeah. 1 membership. Oh, Outpost Gallifrey.
And then go through every
Pompey.
Instance of K-9.
Respect him.
Yes.
Oh, Outpost Gallifrey. Yeah. Jesus Christ, that's...
I got a membership so I could read people's thoughts about the mutants.
Oh, my Lord.
Because we both liked it and we didn't know why people didn't like it.
My favourite was the guy who was like, I liked it, but I also like the Twin Dilemma, yeah. So take that as you will.
And it was his signature on the forum was, but I liked the Twin Dilemma.
There's this page, actually, called Page Fillers. Have you ever been on that?
I don't think so.
Well, there's...
let me go deeper into the internet.
Yes, because basically there was a lot of reviews from before the new series came out. And interesting to look at the reviews without the, the obvious RTG Chibnall bad bias going for it. When the classic series is mainly just judged in and on itself without the rose-tinted spectacles sometimes some people can have.
Back in the heart of the complex, the Nyman has now reached the power source room and starts manipulating the controls of the machine, which begins to cause the complex to glow with energy. It also enables a shimmering tunnel to appear, down which comes a travel globe that bears two more Nyman.
I love this travel globe because it looks so flimsy.
I would quite like it. It sounds like a nice way to travel the world.
Yeah, it reminds me of Thursday Next is like set in an alternate universe, and they have like the tunnels that go all the way through the Earth if you want to travel.
I adore those books.
They're very good. Everyone should read Thursday Next. That's a recommendation for the
Jasper
week.
Ford is a good egg. Maybe we should get Jasper Ford on the show. They announce to the other Nyman that the planet Krynoth is dying and that all the Nyman...
The other Nyman? Oh my god!
Mm-hmm.
There's more than one?
Is that it was the only one?
And all the Nyman must continue to the great journey of life to Skonus. Once the Nyman stalk away, the Doctor examines the globes and pronounces that they are travelling vessels that have journeyed down a tunnel set between two black holes. I don't know if that's, like, science. Is that good science?
I think it reminds me of the wormhole in Deep Space Nine. So it's good science, actually.
Okay.
The Will of the Prophets. I just remembered in the previous episode when Soldeed comes back from talking with the Nyman, and Sorak is like, so what did they talk about? And he goes, the great journey of life! And Sorak is like, again? Sorak says, and he's like, what does it mean? And Soldeed says, mean? It is a metaphor! What is it a metaphor for, Soldeed?
I just love that that's the name they went with, The Great Journey of Life. It's a very simple and prophetic at the same time.
Yeah. I mean,
5 stars on TripAdvisor.
5 stars. Because they just go to every planet, suck it dry, and leave. It's like tourism. That's what tourism is, right?
Yeah, basically.
Yep. Yeah. By mishap, the Doctor sends the globe down the tunnel with Romana in it. But before he can reverse this, Soldeed arrives and uses his staff to destroy the control panel. Soldeed then raises the staff at the Doctor, proclaiming, "You meddling fool! You shall die!" There we go, that's much better than my impression.
It's funny.
Soldeed is so... Sorry. It's the
He's
best cliffhanger.
Everything.
And I love his staff. It's just a crystal on the end of his staff. Like, it's a magic wand. They don't explain it. It's just a magic wand.
Literally. That is,
that's what happens through the great journey of life. You do get magic wands sometimes.
I guess Sold Eater's meant to be like, was it Midas at this point? It was the king of Crete? I don't know. Or like Daedalus, kind of a mixture of the two. Because he's a scientist, apparently, allegedly.
He's about as much of a scientist as I am a scientist.
Certainly. He's a science communicator. He communicates with the Nyan about science.
Oh no, am I soldied?
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
I'll have to start using that voice in my work meetings.
Please do.
I think you should. I think that'd be massively beneficial.
You have brought this calamity upon me!
You made us a mussy!
It's just an eternal performance, like an all-timer.
It's such
a
source of joy. I don't remember the last time I just sat there grinning watching an episode as consistently as I did with this.
Oh, I've rewatched that scene about 5 times.
It's so good.
It's just fantastic.
Yeah, this is the first time I've ever watched it. I enjoyed it very much. I've never been much of a Fourth Doctor fan because I was a hipster. And now I'm like, actually, he's pretty good. Fucking drag me, Aim. Wow.
Gently.
I mean, my hipster interests now are kind of mislaid because all I do is watch 911. So, like, I can't be a hipster anymore because I watch network television.
It's more niche network television, I'd say.
I guess for the UK it is. I think in America UK, it's more popular.
Yeah, fair.
Romana has arrived in the dying world of Krynoth, where she encounters many Nymon who live as per their operation on Skonos. Their equivalent of Soldeed is a broken old man named Sizom, who helped the Nymon establish themselves on his world and now knows they have destroyed it. This is it's a wild fourth episode for them to just have Romana be somewhere else completely for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I like that she gets so much to do on her own and she kicks ass there. It's just such an odd choice.
Yeah, I would agree with you there.
It's very odd staging for a fourth episode.
Yeah.
I also do love that she tends to get more to do in the story than the Doctor does.
Yeah, that's quite true. A lot of joy. Although it is also probably a function of the weak writing that the Doctor doesn't get very much to do.
Yeah.
It's a double-edged sword.
It's also amazing how such a weakly written episode is so much fun. And
yeah.
So enjoyable, and one I will probably rewatch further.
Yeah, it's elevated by the performances. If it was done, but
yeah,
if people played this completely straight, it would be the most probably most boring of the entire season.
I did start, I was watching it on BritBox, and I realised that about 10 minutes into every episode, I was like, is the episode over yet? Because, like, there would have been 5 minutes of nothing.
Yeah.
And then Soldeed would come on screen, and I would be enthralled for the next 10 minutes. I do think, oddly, it's quite well-paced, despite the fact that it's terrible.
It's well-paced because so little happens, and they sort of have to spread it out to make it a four-parter.
Yeah, they've spread it thinly. Like butter.
I was thinking like Marmite.
Ooh,
oh, God.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I also don't like Marmite either, so I don't know why that's where I went.
Yeah,
it's a love it or hate it, I suppose.
Do we all hate it?
Marmite?
Hate
Marmite. Yeah, Marmite. I was referring to Marmite.
But yeah, because like we watched The Twin Dilemma previously, and I think that if someone hadn't seen both of them, they might assume that there would be much of a muchness, right? But The Twin Dilemma, while camp, completely fails to indulge itself in its campness.
Yeah.
Whereas it's not joyful.
That played it straight.
It's not joyful.
That played it too straight. Ooh.
It certainly did. Although it had more gay content
into the gay and benefits from it.
He compares the Nymon to intergalactic locusts swarming between planets and draining them of energy. He has also discovered that when the Jasonite is integrated into the staff that he was supplied with by the Nymon, it has the ability to stun them. Sorry. I love the science of that.
It's creative liberty.
Yeah,
yes,
I don't know what
fix.
Jasonite
I love that.
Is it real?
The science here. And then you go into the next season where they use hard science, like the hardest science you can think of. And you just go back to this one and you're like, huh, okay. Tachyon rays next season? Okay, thank you.
Why not? I guess it's because Douglas Adams left and they were like, we need more science now.
So they're bringing Christopher Bidmead. Oh dear.
He gives Romana an extra piece that he has, but is shortly afterward killed by a Nymon while helping her to escape. My thing is, I've just googled Jasonite, because I was like, oh, well, it's not underlined, so maybe it is a real word. But it's not. It's not a real thing.
And it hasn't been mentioned at all in the story so far, so...
Yeah. They could have just said Hymetricite, which we already knew about, but no. I guess because they'd
or
have to touch it.
Or Anti-Hymetricite.
Anti-Hymetricite?
That's how science works.
It feels like that feels like something that my phone would correct, like homophobia to anti-hermeticides.
Oh my god. The more you know.
Seth shoots Soldied unconscious, and the Doctor then attempts to repair the transportation system. Just as he is about to complete the repairs, the Nymans return to the power source room and restrain him. However, they finish his work by reversing the tunnel, which brings Romana back in the capsule she had been waiting in on Krennoth. Romana tosses the Jasonite to Seth, who now has possession of Soldied's staff, and he uses it to stun two of the Nymans. I do love this thing where the Nymans come in and are like, we will complete this without your interference or whatever. And the Doctor just grins and is like, thank God they've done exactly what I was about to do.
It's had a stop for him, thank goodness.
I also like when they're like repairing stuff and Soldi just gets up and walks off behind them and no one notices.
No, it's crazy.
Which is
so funny.
Odd because he's so noticeable the rest of the time.
He is so noticeable. He draws the eye. Having managed to free himself from Soldied's laboratory, K-9 arrives just in time to deal with the remaining Nymon. Soldied, having escaped from the power source room, has seen the multiple Nymons and his faith is badly damaged. K-9 debate, like K-9 chatting with Sorak in the laboratory is extremely funny. sorry.
I don't recall this bit. My brain.
Sorak has taken all of the guts out of K-9 and then K-9 wakes up and he's like, you can talk? And then he shoots him and zooms off. It's extremely good. I love K-9. Soldied is shot down by Seth, but in his death throes manages to trigger a chain reaction which will destroy the complex. Now guys, do we remember any of Soldied's dialogue in this scene?
You fools.
Oh, that's one. What else do we have? Let's have
a little gander. I can't quite remember the rest of it.
Is this my dreams?
No, it's just after.
I just mean generally his any dialogue we've missed that Soldied has gifted us with is, that we would like to.
You fools! You all doomed! Doomed! Dead.
So good. Also, is it Seth? He yells, "You have brought this calamity upon me!" Oh no, Romana.
You will die for your interference.
My dreams of gone. Quest! And he's grabbing his face and like pulling his eyes open.
He said he was the only one, the last survivor of his race.
Three! I have seen three! It's anyone, please watch the last episode of Nymon just for this, like, breakdown scene by Soldied. And Romana shouting at him is also excellent.
It's so entertaining. I love it.
Oh.
Amazing. Imagine being a child in the 1970s and watching this.
Yeah. Imagine going to school the next day and then just being like, my dreams of conquest, while your teacher looks unconcerned.
Yeah.
And your peers.
Yeah, man. I think if I was a teacher in the 70s, I would also have watched it and I would be delighted.
If a student disbehaves, starts causing trouble, you will die for your interference.
I don't know if that's above board.
Not enough kids these days are watching Doctor Who actively. Like, they watch it, but they're not running around playing Daleks. They're all playing Among Us.
Yeah, oh, cool. Yeah.
These Gen Zs not respecting the classic.
Typical.
I think Doctor Who should make an Among Us episode next season.
Jesus Christ.
I think that would be really groundbreaking.
Oh, trendy.
I'm sure they must have done, like, a spaceship bottle murder episode before.
I mean, they've definitely done homages to The Thing before.
Well, that's basically the base on the siege, isn't it?
I suppose. Although, this is where my status as The Thing super fan
Then again, I've always associated the plot of Among Us with do you remember the original series Star Trek episode Wolf from the Fold?
Oh, the one with Jack the Ripper possessing Scotty, right?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Have you seen that one, Aime?
I've watched all of TOS when I was very feverish and unwell. So I will have, but can't recall it.
That episode is viciously misogynistic, as I recall.
Uh-huh. It is bloody hell. It is. It's not one of my faves, but the plot is definitely, I can definitely draw the parallels between that and Among Us, and that's something that is very weird to me.
I mean, it makes sense. It's just a shame that Scotty doesn't turn into a thing. I think that would be funny if he got thinged.
Yeah.
Where were we? The Doctor and his party make their way out, using K-9 to work out a proper exit path through the labyrinth. K-9 is a sniffer dog, apparently.
I love that K-9 gets stuff to do. The last few times we've seen him, he's just sort of been there.
Yeah.
So it's lovely to see active K-9.
Again, this is his last hurrah, because in season 18, he either gets smashed up, broken,
drowned. It's just, he doesn't have a good time.
Yeah, they didn't like K-9 very much, I think, by this point.
No.
Which is sad. I'm very fond of K-9.
I'm very fond of K-9 also. So they all escape and join up with the remaining members of the Skonin Military Council, all of whom evacuate the main square as the Nyman Power Complex explodes. The drama of it. I love this explosion shot. I think it's genuinely very good. They get to blow up a model, which is always a fun explosion.
It's always great. The model explosions are fun.
I wish anything they'd bring back model work. Fun. I know it looks cheaper. I don't care. I like model
work. Oh, I love model work. A lot of my favourite effects from Star Trek Next Gen and Deep Space Nine were like model shots. And
yeah.
I think they really handled them very, very well. Even if they did use a bit of CGI for like some furnishing and explosions and stuff like that, it doesn't matter because you can't. There's that element of detail that you get with model work that you just can't get with CGI.
Oh, absolutely. The way it catches actual light, which is so hard to do.
The realism is just good. Mm. I miss it. Bring it back, Chibnall.
Seriously.
The only position I'll start at Chris Chibnall is to bring back the tiny model of the TARDIS.
Do it.
Nothing else.
Do it, you coward.
So yes, later in the TARDIS, the Doctor reflects on their adventure as they watch Seth and Tika pilot a spacecraft away from Skonos, having been granted their freedom. Elsewhere, Krynoth can be seen disintegrating. It seems that the Nymon threat is over. The end.
Yay.
To remain in this universe, the creature would have to reverse its polarity.
It was such a fun one to watch, but looking at the plot, there's not massive amounts there.
It's, yeah.
No, it's everything to do with the actual plot is boring as sin. Like,
I was just going to say, you could easily fit this into a 45-minute if you wanted to.
You really could. Like, could have been a two-parter.
Yeah.
The first, like, there's a lot of faffing about and running up and down corridors.
I mean, the first episode, nothing really happens.
Yeah, the fourth episode, not much happens. Because they go to another planet for no reason. We already understood that they were disintegrating the planets. It's just to get the thing that will let them stun the Nyman, which they could have done with the Hymetricite, probably. They didn't need it.
No.
But we don't actually need our segment on how to improve the episode, because we still enjoyed it. So
yeah.
It's fine.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I will watch it again numerous times.
Yes.
Oh, definitely. It's good.
Maybe I'll invite some friends around when that's possible again and have some wine and watch this.
Oh, yes. My God.
All right.
But
let's
get sozzled by the time of part four. It'll be a riot.
That'd be brilliant. It sounds like a brilliant night in.
Oh, my God. Drinking game would be very good, actually.
Remember drinking games?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I started writing one the other day for watching 911 Lone Star because I was so unamused by the number of times that they'd mentioned 9/11 to the extent that I could predict when they were about to mention it based on the music cue that they had inside. Yeah, Rob Lowe is in it. It's not as good as the original show because Rob Lowe is in it.
An apple a day keeps the... No, never mind.
I really enjoyed the Doctor in this episode. I thought he had great energy. He had all of the chemistry with Lala Ward. Lots of brilliant eye acting. Like,
yes.
Good face.
Mm. Yes.
Good face move.
Nice grins. Teeth acting.
Mm. Absolutely.
The closest relationship he seems to have is K-9, and it's very good.
Absolutely. They come across so... everyone of the TARDIS team just comes across like they actually like each other in this story.
Yes, they do.
Which is absolutely delightful. Tom's chemistry with Lala is a delight to watch and see that some of Lala's laughing. Like at the end shot when she's has that little scraunchy face and then she goes into a laugh and it's just so natural.
Yeah.
You can tell that's just genuinely natural and I love that. Tom is just perfectly on form in this episode. He's just manic, he's crazy, he's funny, he's basically the Fourth Doctor at his best. And I just really, really enjoy the character, well, the team anyway, in this series. Serial.
Yeah. I mean, I think AIM really hit on the head with the fact, or whoever really hit on the head with the fact that they all like each other.
Yeah.
Which is something that I often, like, when I'm kind of ranking Team TARDISes, it is usually, it ends up with a lot of the ones up high are teams that just really like each other. Because it's miserable watching people be angry at one another all the time.
Yeah, it's something we brought up quite a lot last time with Destiny of the Daleks and the relationship between Jamie and Victoria. Is it Victoria in that one?
Destiny of the Daleks?
Is that... Are you thinking of Evil?
Seeds of Death is what I'm
saying. Seeds of Death is with Zoe.
Did I say that's the wrong story?
It's with Zoe. It's because we've been thinking about Romana so much. But yeah, Jamie and Zoe and Two have a great relationship. And then it's not the only kind of dynamic that I like with Team TARDIS, but I need at least two of them to like each other.
Yeah. I mean, there is. I love Seven and Ace. They have got some good respect going on.
Seven and Ace are some of my faves. Brilliant partnership.
We love Ace on this podcast.
As you should.
Yes.
Who doesn't?
I like a lot of his fun dialogue in this. I like when he gave Seth a little pat on the head. I do think maybe one of the detriments of this story is it doesn't lean far enough into the comedy for me. Like, it's not necessarily a comedic story, but it doesn't have anything serious for anyone to do. So the gravity of the situation does not hit whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. I definitely found myself laughing out loud quite a lot, more than I usually do.
Yeah, probably wasn't intentional, but still.
I think still, a lot of exactly. It is the performers leaning into the comedy, and which the script doesn't necessarily always have. So when they get to a serious scene, you just tune out. You're like, why are Tika and Seth talking about this? I don't care. But they've got all their friends freeze-dried on the wall. Of course they're concerned. God, we didn't talk about the freeze-dried people on the wall, did we?
No.
The Nymans eat by consuming the binding energy of living matter, or whatever it was, which is a... It doesn't mean anything, but that's fine.
Ends up being quite concerning.
Yes, it does end up being quite concerning. but yeah. Really, we just enjoyed 4. Does anyone have any other comments on 4 before we move on to talk about the companions?
I've said all I need to.
I have to go.
Now look, if you're going to be in trouble, you'll need me to look after you.
Me too.
But you don't understand.
Romana in this story was absolutely excellent. Mm-hmm.
She really was. She has a great outfit.
She was in control of the situation. She got to do lots, which is great because there's so many instances of companion following about. But here, Romana was really had a lot of autonomy.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's what I love about the Romanas, because they're just so powerful in their own right.
And so confident. Yeah.
But then I think sometimes the writing doesn't know what to do with them. Like in Destiny, she has barely anything to do. Mm. She's knocked out for half an episode and then she gets captured and put inside a big glass tube. Like
she fakes her death at least once.
Yes, she does. But in this one, she gets to do a lot of independent running around corridors.
Doctor Who feminism at its best, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yep. I liked when Sol Dude calls her a meddlesome hussy because I was like, yes, that's my meddlesome hussy you're talking to, Sol Dude. She's just so confident and does not take any shit, and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Inspirational.
It's what we like to
definitely.
See.
Yes. Such a cool, confident character. And, like, that is for, at that time, like, very early 1980s, late 1970s, fantastic female role model.
Yeah. And Doctor Who is quite hit and miss with its female role model.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. All right. K-9, bitchy little dog. I love him. I love him so much.
Oh, how can you ever not like K-9? He's just a babe.
Yeah,
he's
my notes in this section get progressively more excited.
I love it. It goes into all caps on the second line.
It does. His little rosette for being the best dog. And when the suction cup stretches out to give Four a little kiss on the forehead.
That's
it's
cute.
It's very cute. Like, it's a man and his robot dog, you know? And I don't care if Tom Baker didn't like K-9.
Because we like him, and that's what matters.
Exactly.
He never does fucking know anything when it's important, but that's not the point.
I know, he does quite a lot in this episode.
Yeah, he shoots a guy. You know, the guy. Sorak, I think.
That guy.
Outstanding.
Yep. And then he zooms off. And then he sniffs his way out the labyrinth. And he identifies the exit, which is disguised as a wall, but is actually a very poorly composited green screen effect. Where they walk behind the picture of the wall that's in front of them.
Yes. Oh, God.
I would like more robot dogs.
Yes, more robot dogs in
fiction,
please.
I don't think my cats would like the robot dogs, however.
Other robot dogs in fiction. The robot dog from Wallace and Gromit Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Oh.
Any other robot dogs?
Good robot dog.
I can't call.
Oh, hang on.
I feel like there's an episode
of Scooby-Doo
with the robot
dog. No, that dog's not a robot. It's in A Close Shave, the dog is a robot as well, right? Are they both robot dogs?
There's definitely one in that franchise.
I vaguely recall seeing a poster for Star Trek Lower Decks of a dog.
That's a robot.
I can't recommend Star Trek Lower Decks highly enough. It's so good.
I saw that.
Yes, there is a robot dog in A Close Shave. All right.
All right, fictional robotic dogs.
Yes, okay.
There are five.
Five.
According to Wikipedia.
Yay.
One is Chomps from a 1979 American comic science fiction family film of the same name.
Okay.
There is Dinomutt Dog Wonder, a late 70s cartoon from Hanna-Barbera. Mm-hmm. There is Goddard from Jimmy Neutron. Nice. There is K-9, of course, and Metalhead from
Black
Mirror.
Oh, God, the Terminator.
Those are the five robot dogs on Wikipedia.
Nice. I think...
Solid.
I mean, they have missed out the Wallace and Gromit ones, which is an extreme omission of cultural importance.
Yeah.
Maybe you can go onto Wikipedia and edit this misdeed.
Maybe I could, if I could be bothered to get a Wikipedia editing account.
I think that's probably because... Wasn't the robot dog in Wallace and Gromit originally a real dog, and then he became a robot? Or is it... Or am I going to the wrong street here?
It's been so long since I've seen it.
It's possible that the one in Were-Rabbit is not a robot. I just... Because they're both very sentient dogs, Gromit and whatever the other dog is. But I know that in A Close Shave, the dog is a robot dog because he's stealing the sheep.
Yeah, I have not seen that in years.
I put on the wrong trousers for a class of year threes at lunchtime. And then because I couldn't be bothered to teach them, I put the rest of it on in the afternoon.
That's brilliant. That's
incredible.
Excellent
teaching.
Work.
Yeah. We had to do a PSHE lesson on friendship, so afterwards I was like, so do you think Wallace is being a good friend to Gromit? The answer is no. I am normally better teacher than that. I was just very tired.
I bet they loved it, though.
Oh, yeah. They had a lot of fun. They were all very invested in Feathers McGraw's evilness. Right.
Amazing.
On your knees, Doctor.
It's a camp episode.
It's
in the
so
best
camp.
Sort of way.
Oh,
like the
campest of
the costuming,
lot.
The acting, the Nyman with their platform heels.
It all comes together just to be visually and theatrically stunning.
It's a feast for the eyes. Just everything. I mean, I love that some of them are wearing these kind of like samurai inspired like origami sleeves. That's what Sorek's got going on. And then Soldeed is literally just wearing a wizard's outfit.
Yeah, he's just dressed. He's got a cape.
Yeah, with the
like
staff and the cape. And
yeah, literally. He's a scientist and a wizard. And speaking
well,
of
Soldeed. What if scientists are wizards?
Scientists.
What if wizards are scientists?
That's just what Battlefield is about.
Yeah, true.
And I loved it.
Yes. Speaking of Soldeed, someone is digging a black hole on his doorstep.
Inflections, man. Inflections.
It's just Soldeed. Everything about Soldeed is deliciously camp and extremely gay.
Worth watching the entire story for.
Yes, absolutely. The moment he showed up, I was like, oh my god, this is the perfect episode of any television.
He's so good. I think they were kind of aiming for fascist dictator style with him, but they actually land on fabulous, which is a shame because fascists are the furthest thing from fabulous that I can imagine.
Yeah, they sort of threaded the needle in such a way that it looks like nothing else.
Yeah, there's no way you can take this man seriously as a dictator. He'd be thrown out of the nearest EDL lot in about 20 seconds.
It's like, you know, in the IT Crowd when Jen is about to go on a date and Roy is like, oh, the man who looks like a magician. That's how I feel about it.
Yes, I vaguely recall that.
Incredible. Yep. Strong eyebrow game as well.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Very strong eyebrow game.
Going up and down like anything.
That's one way to describe it.
Oh, yeah. Am I wrong?
No, you are entirely correct.
See, exactly.
Acrobatic eyebrows, yeah. I think that K-9 originated the concept of being a gay dog, which was then developed in Legally Blonde 2.
I need to hear more of this thesis.
I've seen that movie and I actually kind of like it as well, so...
I haven't even seen Legally Blonde 2. I just know that the whole thing is that Elle is offended that people don't like that her dog is gay or something to that.
Yeah, point. There was, I believe she originally goes to stop Bruiser's mum, and Bruiser's the name of the dog for those who haven't seen the Legally Blonde movie, unlike
and
me.
You should watch Legally Blonde.
You should too.
It's
an excellent
so
movie. But yeah, animal testing. So originally she wants to get the dog out, then it emerges. I can't remember. Oh yeah,
she meets this senator's, this Republican senator's dog, and Bruiser basically comes out as gay because they try to hump each other. And it's just that then she ends up wanting to pass the bill against animal testing at the same time. It's all like gay rights for animals. And I'm like, yeah, why not?
Gay rights for animals. I mean,
gay rights for humans as well.
Please. Yes, true.
But, you know, also for animals.
But I mean, that's
one of my...
Outstandingly...
No, I won't go into my gay animal segment.
I was just going to say, it's wonderfully progressive for like 2004, whenever it was made.
Yeah, and it's even more progressive for 1979.
Yeah, even more so. Dog. Yeah.
Doctor Who has been nothing if not future-facing this entire time. Yeah.
Yes, nothing on Doctor Who has ever been regressive.
No, not even slightly.
Eek.
Eek. Oy boy.
The Nyman and their heels.
Yes, as discussed. They should have just got like drag queens to do this because they would have been able to walk in them perfectly. But they
would have worked.
That would have been amazing.
Just strutting.
I mean,
down
I do think I've seen
halls.
Similar outfits at Pride before.
Oh my word!
Almost definitely, especially the
I miss
horns.
Pride. I miss seeing humans,
which they use as anyway. Laser guns. I don't think that got emphasized enough in our recap either. They use the horns to shoot lasers.
I love it. I wish I had laser horns.
Yeah, that'd be good. That should be the next phase in human evolution is laser horns.
Submit it to the committee for discussion.
It's a logical step, why not?
Yeah. Where else would we go besides laser horns?
Yeah, exactly. What? You want another tail? No way. You want laser horns. Yeah. That's what you want.
I too miss Pride very much. God.
I've never done one. I would love to.
Oh, they're incredible.
So much fun.
And you get so much free shit that you're then throwing away for years afterwards.
Oh, wow, okay. I'm always down for free stuff.
The great thing about Oxford Pride is that anybody can march in the parade. So rather than somewhere it's a bit gated and you have to sign up, anyone can just show up and be part of it. And it's such a great atmosphere.
They do that at Bristol as well. It's good.
Oh, amazing. I'd love to go to Bristol Pride.
Do it. Come and hang out with me.
Yay. When it's allowed.
2025 at least, oh, right?
My. Perfect. Cool. I'll put it in the diary.
Oh, sure. Lots of people.
And there's a woman.
A woman? Hey.
I'm handing you your boarding pass to board the plane to...
It's a tiny plane, just like one of those little propeller ones.
To Wifetopia.
There is only one citizen of Wifeville this week.
We're still on the plane.
do they have any like in-flight movies?
No, but they have peanuts. I don't like peanuts, so you can have mine.
Oh, you can have mine.
Oh no! Now we've got the same number of peanuts. Yeah, so we talk about Romana this week because Teek is kind of a non-entity as it is. Poor Janet Ellis.
I think underwritten as well as...
Very underwritten.
Doesn't get anything to do besides assure Seth that he will be able to rescue them.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Confidence building of the bloke, right?
But yeah, AIM put the note Romana here and then... I don't think I even need to explain, but unfortunately this is a podcast, so we do have to explain.
Yeah, alas.
I adore Romana. I went into it in the previous episode that we saw with her. I just love her. She's confident. She's clever. She's such a great counterpart for the Doctor.
Definitely.
I would like her to be my counterpart.
In life.
How do I get to Gallifrey and propose to Romana?
That would be very good. It's not time-locked anymore, is it, Gallifrey? I haven't been keeping up with the Gallifrey lore, as it were.
Oh, time-locked? Well, God knows at this point. I mean, all I know is
it's very confusing.
I'm very behind on New Who because I've really struggled with hour-long episodes.
Okay.
They've had some great Gallifrey lore lately.
I know that the Master went there with the Cybermen and they killed a whole bunch of Time Lords.
You're kind of right. Do you want me to tell you or do you want to find out for yourself?
Please tell me. I don't care.
Okay. Oh, that's fair enough. Okay. So basically, modern update. The Time Lords are all dead. Killed by the Master and with their corpses turned into Cybermen.
Oh, shit.
And they have like Cybermen wearing like the massive Gallifrey
the
and
colours,
and stuff. And it's a look. It's incredible.
It is quite astonishing, really.
But they're also all dead once
again.
Damn. But what about Romana?
Now a Cyberman, presumably. Now a Cyberman.
Oh, no. Well, we won't know until confirmation.
Yeah, until confirmation.
Refuse.
But
And even maybe if they do confirm it, I can simply disagree. Like, cyber Lethbridge Stewart didn't happen. Not canon.
Unfortunately for you.
I mean, they're doing interesting stuff with Time Lord mythology anyway, so...
But yeah, very that's not... Yeah, that's kind of the smallest thing that happened in the story. I mean, yeah. Yeah, you have a lot to catch up on.
I really do. I really do. But, you know, sometimes watching TV that I care about is actually quite hard. So instead I watch 911, which I care about, but has extremely low, like, low requirements for attention.
That's fair. That's fair.
In the year of our Lord 2021. Understandable.
Yes, exactly. I want to marry Romana because she's very pretty, and she's very, very bossy, and I love her. I just... Every time I see a Romana 2 story, I'm like, oh my god, she's just perfect.
She is just perfect. I adore her.
She's wonderful. She's so intelligent. She does not take the Doctor's shit. It's just, man, so good. Very glad the Time Lords, like forced the Doctor to have Romana as a companion.
We are all the better for it.
We are all the better for it.
Absolutely.
Except Gallifrey, possibly. Now we...
Today's science fiction so often becomes tomorrow's science fact.
Actually, Rosie, do you want to start with this little newspaper clipping that you pasted
in? Yes, I scoured the Doctor Who weeklies from around the time that Horns of Nymon was being broadcast. Unfortunately, at this point, it was definitely more of a comic rather than a magazine, so they didn't have a proper review. But they did have a little article about the historical or mythological influence on this story. Some of you watching the recent Horns of Nymon story on television may have done so with a curious feeling that you've seen some of it before. This could be due to the story's roots in Greek and Cretan mythology deliberately built in by the writer Anthony Reed. Lord Nymon's maze-like complex closely resembled a similar structure built by King Minos to house the Minotaur, a terrifying creature half-man, half-bull. Are the Inethans the heroes of the piece?
I mean, they're not the villains.
Yeah. The deuteragonists. Derived from Athens, with Theseus, seeker of the Golden Fleece, becoming embodied as Seth. The clue to his identity came right at the end of the story, with the Doctor referring to the Inethan spaceship being painted white to denote the end of a successful quest. Theseus forgot that detail, with tragic consequences for his father, Aegeus.
Thank you, Doctor Who Weekly Announcer.
Yes, no problem. I was possessed by the spirit, not Terry Nation this time.
He'll return.
And then there's a little telly snap of the Nymon and the Fourth Doctor. I get the mythological connection. I just don't think it does very much in the story.
It's a framing device that they don't explore.
Yeah.
And if the point of adapting existing stories is to explore them deeper or subvert them, this somehow does neither.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is amazing.
Amazing. We'd love a good pun.
No. I'm annoyed that I didn't get the pun.
So The Horns of Nymon was broadcast in December 1979 and January 1980. Douglas Adams wanted to try out some new writers for Doctor Who, but found that many of them didn't truly understand what the show was about, so went back to Anthony Reed, who also doesn't seem to truly understand what the show is about.
I want
to
know what Douglas Adams thought the show was about, because I love Douglas Adams, but what was his goal?
I wish that we'd had like some Adams master plan.
Yeah, oh, that would be good.
Getting the vibe that Douglas Adams just saw people contribute scripts to the show and was like, they're good, but they don't go with my vision.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he did to Destiny of the Daleks.
Yeah.
It's good, but it's not weird enough. It used to be more quirky in the way that I... Yeah, bless him. During the time this episode was airing, Lala Ward was publicising a book she'd written called Astrology for Dogs. K9 was an Aquarius, and she also said that Romana would be a Gemini. Geminis are meant to get on very well with Aquariuses.
That's so
I
pure.
See. That's sweet.
Very good. I need to look at this book. A pound and a half of jelly babies were ordered for this production.
Oh my god, did they have to retake that scene where he was handing the jelly babies around multiple times? No, we need to do it again.
Just in case.
No, I don't want any more.
I also sort of wonder if he always needed fresh jelly babies in case he wanted to improv the jelly babies
True. Just in case.
Yeah, exactly. The script describes Romana's sonic screwdriver as an obviously superior one, which I think is very funny. Sorek's origami sleeves, as he put them, were inspired by their design of the Sydney Opera House. Which kind of I don't know why you'd look at the Sydney Opera House and think, wow, I need that on my arm.
Sleeve.
But somebody evidently did.
I guess it was quite novel at the time. I can't remember when the Sydney Opera House opened. But I've researched it, guys, and Lala Ward was the illustrator of Astrology for Dogs.
Oh, the illustrator, not the author. She does a lot of illustration stuff.
I feel like being an illustrator of a book called Astrology for Dogs is a dream job. Like,
that's cool, though. Either way.
We've gone over a little bit about how the story was inspired by the myths of Theseus and the Minotaur. Several names are anagrams or near anagrams of names from the myth.
Yay!
We haven't had anagrams for a while, but we're back to
anagrams.
Anagrams.
Oh, no.
So Athens becomes Aneth. Theseus becomes Seth. Minos becomes Nymons. And Corinth becomes Krinos.
Soldied became Soldied.
Soldied is very much a creature of his own creation.
Yes.
The power complex is like the Labyrinth, and the Nymon, as said before, are like the Minotaur.
Yeah, and then after, there's going to be a sequel to The Horns of Nymon where Seth and the Nymon team up and have to battle Griazag in a series of eternally looping boss battles.
I would love this. There's a feature on the DVD called Who Peter, which is about Doctor Who and Blue Peter, and it's a really perfect, lovely little short documentary about the relationship of the two shows.
Extremely cute.
My first sort of exposure to Doctor Who, before I'd seen any, was in the 60s and 70s Blue Peter annuals that my gran had, that my mum had when she was a kid. So I'd read a lot about it in these slightly musty-smelling books, so it was very nostalgic for me. And there's also a little clip where K-9 meets Shep in the Blue Peter studio, and it's possibly the best thing I've ever seen in my life. If you just need a bit of a mood boost, try and find that clip, because Shep is just so wildly excited to meet K-9, and it's adorable.
Aww. I did recently buy a 70s Blue Peter annual, so that's how my life has been going.
That's so cool.
It had Peter Purvis on the cover, and I was like, ooh.
You had to. You couldn't not. This serial, as we said earlier, was meant to be followed by one more, Shada, but due to a strike, production of Shada was abandoned, making The Horns of Nymon a premature season finale. So it marked the end of several different eras. It's the last story that producer Graham Williams worked on, and the final script to be edited by Douglas Adams. It's the last story in which David Brearley voices K-9. It's the last story that was scored by composer Dudley Simpson. And it's the final appearance of Tom Baker wearing his original scarf and coat. And they were later replaced with the burgundy versions.
And
which I really like the burgundy versions.
It's also the last appearance of the original theme in the opening.
Of
the entire classic run.
Remix it.
They remixed it. Peter Howell did the next remix for the for season 18 and onwards to the first season of Colin Baker era, and it's also the last appearance of the title sequence as well before they head on to the space and neon lights.
Yeah, if anyone's interested, Dom has done a ranking video of his opinions on the Doctor Who opening.
Oh my goodness, you did! You researched me, that's for sure. Oh my god.
I love that your intro is the Chase theme music.
I'm a massive, massive uber fan of the Chase.
I love seeing your tweets about the Chase. It
brings
me a lot of joy.
It's extremely good.
I know. I love it so much. It's weird, really. I know. But it's weird how...
No, it's not.
I mean, we sit around talking about classic Doctor Who twice a week. Yeah. There's nothing weird about loving the Chase.
No, well, when you put it that
this
way.
This is not a place where we shame anybody's special interests.
Have I not just been... extremely effusive about my love for the television show 911.
Well, that's fair. When you put it that way, I mean, it is... it's weird that a quiz show can bring you such joy, but it does for me.
I do that with Only Connect. Only Connect gets
me. Only Connect is cool.
Ages.
Yeah. Also, my mum works for the Chase.
Really?
So
what does she do?
That's cool.
Yeah. She is a question verifier. But yeah, she worked for The Weakest Link and Factor, a bunch of other stuff.
I can cut
that because my mom's going to listen to this.
Oh,
I don't know.
Well,
leave it in.
I shouldn't say the name of her boss, probably.
Oh, true. Yeah. Well, I
trim
think
it down. But...
Yeah, she works for the Chase.
Your mom's cool.
Yeah, my mom is cool. Thank you. Hi, mom. If you're listening to my podcast.
Beside the incomplete Shada, this is the last of the original series that wasn't produced by John Nathan Turner. Which, I wonder if there's... The more we look into it, the more we're going to see you really don't like JNT, do you?
I don't know, man. I think he did good things, but also that's a long time to be producing one television show.
It's a very long time. I think he was trying to leave so...
Yeah, he would have left in 1985, I believe.
If he could.
If he could have, but they were like, no, he persuaded to... No, 1986, because I believe that would have been the end point of Colin and he would have wanted to leave together.
Yeah.
And then, but he was like... Okay, he said he's persuaded to stay, when realistically they had no one else for the show because no one wanted to take over the Poison Chalice. And aww, yeah, it's
a shame
because the show was really, thanks to Michael Grade, seen very poorly in the middle of the 80s. It's,
oh, Michael Grade.
Look, we will get to him.
Oh, yeah.
I also sort of wonder because John Nathan Turner, but we'll get to him in a John Nathan Turner episode, but I do want to posit, maybe he was a possible candidate for the Bad Gays podcast.
Oh.
Bad Gays podcast?
Do you listen to Bad... It's a very good podcast looking to various queer people from history who are not the best people.
Morally really dubious gays.
Morally dubious gays. Really well researched about two people who specialise in queer history talking about... Especially because there's such an idea that queer people need to be pure and we need to be seen as always doing good because we have been cast in so many bad lights. And this humanizes it in a lot of ways.
Ooh, Ronnie Cray. That's a fun one.
Cool. So I think...
Anyway.
And we've mentioned the other 2 points. So that's my behind the scenes for the week.
Yay!
Delightful.
We'd all go, except Miss Shaw.
Oh, just a minute. I'm not going to miss all
No, Miss Shaw.
Have you never heard of female emancipation?
Liz, this time I think he's right.
I think we've said a lot of our critique
already. Yeah, it's just... It's not good.
It's very much the school of bad but fun, which it's very much my shit.
It is very much on... I imagine it would be on the TV Tropes So Bad It's Good page, but I haven't been on TV Tropes in about 2 years, thank God.
Oh.
I always get stuck down
TV Tropes.
Yeah, I had to leave it behind when I encountered the straight gay trope. I was like, oh my God.
This
is what I haven't encountered.
It's a trope on TV Tropes, which was presumably named by straight people, which is a gay person who doesn't act gay, which means they're obviously a straight gay.
We don't like
TV Tropes in this house, but I also like going on it because it always has the worst fic recs in the entire world. So I go on, I'm like, ooh, a 500,000 word fanfic that sounds absolutely dog shit. Of course I'll read it.
Of course he will.
But yeah, it's just nothing happens for the middle 10 minutes of every episode. Like, each episode...
The pacing is off.
They could easily be 10 minutes shorter an episode and you wouldn't lose anything, really.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Which is not a good sign.
You might lose some great Soldeed moments, but...
No, see, I'm thinking you cut everything else. We just have a Soldeed one-man show. Where he talks
I would
of
pay
his dreams
good money to see that at 1 a.m. at the Fringe.
Yeah, I was thinking he's on an all dark stage. I've only ever seen one-man show, but it was a depressing one. So, yeah, I think Soldeed is sorely underrepresented in cosplay. Dom.
Ha ha. Okay. That's less than subtle.
The other point you've made here is either it being another two-woman serial. And Tika has to wear high heels in her ceremonial sacrifice outfit.
Yeah, with the wide legs.
It's not good.
It's just...
Not good.
She doesn't get anything to do. She just hangs off Seth the entire time. And, like, Seth doesn't, like, really come clean to her at any point. Like, he tries to tell her, and she's like, no, obviously you are a prince, and you're just being modest. Like, Tika, can you grow a brain cell, please?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think Janet Ellis does fine with the material. It's just, like, why?
The material is...
But
very,
they just didn't give her enough material.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the issue.
Which is so common for female characters.
Yeah.
Even nowadays, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I guess that's our critique, is that it's just not very good.
It's like a very underproved loaf of bread.
Yay.
Leaves you feeling like it could have been a really good loaf of bread, but it wasn't. However, the bread was funny.
Yes, the bread was funny. It was a funny shape.
Unrelated, Alien was being filmed in the same year.
Oh,
and released.
Yeah. Very fun. Clearly they had a bit more money on Alien, I would say.
Yeah, just a little bit. Although some say Alien is a ripoff of the Ark in Space.
I've heard that, actually, yeah. I haven't seen the Ark in Space, but, you know.
It'll show up on our list one day.
No doubt, no doubt.
me get this straight. A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard, it can move anywhere in time and space?
Yes.
Quite so.
But that's ridiculous.
I love how you put it in the notes. 9 months in the EU.
European Union, in the expanded universe. So the 9 months have been sorely underutilized in the expanded universe. They have appeared, as far as I can tell, in two things. One is the Eighth Doctor audio Seasons of Fear, which I think might be on Spotify because it was the 30th in the monthly range, but I haven't listened to it yet. And then there was also an 11th Doctor comic. I've not got into the comics on here very much because I am so bad at reading comics at the moment.
I just find them to be difficult to access.
Yeah, that's another issue, is that they have the compilations obviously out there, but most of them are out of print or just difficult to find and expensive, and I don't have the money. So I would rather download PDFs of all the books.
Yeah, yeah. Strategic.
Seasons of Fear is on Spotify.
Yay! The first 50 Big Finish monthly range audios are on Spotify. We've mentioned this before. I just want to think it bears repeating because a lot of them are absolutely stellar. They're really good. Mm. Also, The Holy Terror featuring Frobisher is on Spotify.
The Holy Terror is one of my favourite listening experiences of the past year.
It's fantastic.
Frobisher never fails to brighten my day. Thank you for this gift of Penguin.
Yes, the Nymon also get mentioned, I think, once in the new series in the God Complex, because they encounter the Minotaur and Eleven is like, oh, yeah, the cousins of the Nymon, which is quite fun. I hope that's a spiritual cousin.
Yeah, interesting.
not like the Nymon's mom is the Minotaur's dad's sister. I don't know how that would work. More Nymons in the EU, please. I think that would be good. Kana, I've already talked about the Doctor and Romana 2 in the EU a little bit, so I'm going to talk about K-9 this episode, because I think K-9 was very good in this episode, and anyone who wants more K-9,
choose carefully.
Yeah, so there's K-9 and Company, which is bad. However, that doesn't mean
we will do an episode on it one day.
Something being bad doesn't mean that it's not good. There's also the weird CGI live-action K-9 show that I haven't watched, but the design of K-9 in it makes me scared. I look at it and I go, that's not my little dog.
Yeah, I mean, that's the funny thing, because his original design is seen in that series, but then they replace it with that monstrosity, and it's a bit weird. Also, we can't let it slide about... let me check your notes. Did you already mention it? No, you didn't. K-9 Time Craig.
Which one's K-9
Time? Oh, my God. So basically, K-9 Time Craig is the thing that has been supposedly being created by his original makers, but it was originally supposed to come out in, what, 2017? We're still waiting.
Oh, my God.
It's become a little bit of a meme.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This graphic. Oh, my God.
Please pop it in the chat.
Have seen it?
The graphic is incredible. I hope this thing works. Yeah. I'm sure they have the rights to K-9, but it's going to end up being like Sontaran's Curse of the Rutans or whatever.
The main villain was
a BBV production.
The main villain was supposed to be Omega.
I mean, if they have the rights to it.
Yeah, apparently.
Have we seen Omega at all in New Who or New Who era?
I want to say something, but I'm not going to spoil it.
Okay,
so...
It's fine.
There is about a little...
This is the expanded universe section.
Okay, so there's a little bit of a five... Are we referring to Omega, right?
Yeah.
So there's a little 5-second clip in The Timeless Children where you see basically the incarnations of Rassilon and Omega alongside Tetu, who's the OC of the Time Lord Founders, created by Chris Chibnall. It's just a little brief vision, but you can kind of gather it's them.
Yeah,
I enjoy the
a lot
the derision
in those
of
visions.
Referring to a character that the showrunner created as an OC of Chris Chibnall's.
Yeah. I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I love Omega. I've only encountered him in the Three Doctors, and he is perfect.
he's hilarious.
Right, so there was the weird CGI love action show, there was K-9 Timequake, which isn't out yet, and then there was Sarah Jane Adventures, where he was stuck in space for like 2 seasons. I haven't watched Sarah Jane Adventures in ages, but I remember...
That I don't recall.
I remember they would like Skype him while he was still in space.
Yeah.
I'd love to Skype a robot dog in space.
Yeah, why is he in space? I don't... If anyone remembers the context, please tweet us nicely.
I think he's trying to stop a black hole or something.
Yeah, there was something going on with it. I watched Sarah Jane Adventures for the characters and the fun, not necessarily for the overarching, like, is Mr. Smith evil plot, which did happen at one point.
That still trips me out that that happened.
Thanks, Alexander Armstrong.
Good lord.
It was a weird one. Audio-wise, K-9 has been in Zagreus, as every fucking actor was in Zagreus.
Yeah, they were.
As K-9, though, I believe. The character was in there as himself, unlike...
Which is surprising for Zagreus.
Unlike Nicholas Courtney as the TARDIS, and then 8 as Zagreus, obviously, and a bunch of other stuff. Mm. He was in two audios in something called Adventures in a Pocket Universe. He was in 7 series of The Fourth Doctor's Adventures, 6 series of Gallifrey, and 3 Companion Chronicles. I haven't delineated which mark K-9 each of these is, so I imagine there's different K-9 Mark 2. Which one's got exploded? One of them got exploded, didn't it?
Mark 3 was the one that exploded. Mark 4 was the one that's with Sarah Jane now.
Okay, cool. Good to know.
Had to really dredge that out.
Yeah, he also had his own annual, I assume, back in the 70s and 80s.
Bless him.
And then... Book-wise, he was in 2 Virgin New Adventures, 4 Virgin Missing Adventures, 3 Past Doctor Adventures, and 2 Eighth Doctor Adventures, one of which is set on Gallifrey, so I reckon that'll be the Romana K-9.
Yeah.
I haven't managed to actually read any of the Doctor Who novels while we've been making this podcast, because it takes a long time to read a novel, which is why every episode I choose a short trip to feature. K-9 was in 3 Decalogues, which were the Virgin short trips, and then 15 of the BBC Books / Big Finish short trips over the course of 31 volumes. So for this episode, I have chosen a short trip from Short Trips, A Christmas Treasury, the most seasonal short trip I could have chosen. It's called Present Tense by Ian Potter, and it is only 2 pages long. It was so easy to read.
Okay.
It is, the Doctor has got Romana a Christmas present. Let's not discuss why the Doctor is celebrating Christmas.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sure he's picked it up as a habit from his various companions. So he's got her a Christmas present for Romana. And he has got for her a tiara, which is from, it's like he's found this really famous tiara from another planet. I'm going to find the exact name of it. And he's managed to find 2 days in its history where it was not being worn. And he has taken it for her and they will return it when it's finished, when she's done with it. And Romana seems sort of, Romana seems a little bit nonplussed by this. She's not very excited. And he's like, well, what's up with it? And she goes, oh, well, I suppose I'll go and put it with the other one, because he got it for her the previous Christmas as well.
Amazing. Of course he did.
He got K-9 an old biscuit for Christmas.
Aww.
Romana suspects that he has been programmed by the Doctor to enjoy old biscuits, although I would say that most dogs like biscuits, generally.
My cat definitely eats stale biscuits.
Yeah, it's a special crown because it can learn. And K-9 states that the crown will acquire new information while it's here, and the Doctor admits to having taught it to sing certain songs. And then he thinks they probably shouldn't put the 2 crowns in the same cupboard, because then they'll learn from each other, which might end up with a bit of a paradox going on. And then Romana gives the Doctor his gift, which is that she has found a slice of time from like 1913 in a rose garden that he likes, and she has put that in the Zero Room for him to go and contemplate in whenever he likes. Good mention of the Zero Room. Something that I really enjoy in Doctor Who is just any room in the TARDIS that they mention once. The Zero Room being an extremely important part of the serial Castrovalva, but otherwise not really mentioned. And then they all sing Christmas carols together, including K-9 and the 2 crowns, and the Doctor gives Romana a hug, and it's very cute. It's very cute. It's a cute short trip.
Aww,
I thought I'd feature something cute after the last few being Jamie turns into a werebear.
Absolutely horrific.
The previous one was Romana getting frozen in space while the TARDIS went off to have adventures. The one before that was... What was the one before that? The one before that was... Oh, that one was Jo telling her daughter a cute story about 3, so that was all right. One before that was about a ghost flower girl. Before that, we had the Doctor and Perry switching bodies.
Well, which one was the one where they had no faces?
The one where they had no faces was for the Tomb of the Cybermen. It was Face Painter, I think, was the name of the story. Yeah. And that was a freaky one. Just a lot of freaky ones. And obviously the ultimate first episode where Adric and Four got trapped in a castle made of bones. Forever. It's a good one. Everyone should read Short Trips because they are all mental in the best possible way.
I've been slowly making my way through a few of them, and they're just nice, easy, bite-sized reading throughout the day, and sometimes horrific.
Yeah, and sometimes really good and suspenseful, like the Jamie turning into a werebear one, which I really liked. All right, let's move on to our ranking. So every episode, yes, we choose an X of the week, so any category of the week to choose from, based on the episode. And we'll go first so that Dom has some time to think of one because we forgot to warn him about it.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
That was something to forget. I think that my X of the week is going to be my dodgy science of the week.
Okay.
Is that how black holes work?
Always a fantastic X of the week. My X of the week is dodgy mineral of the week with hymetricite. You could just pick any radioactive element or ore. They exist already. You don't have to invent new ones every time.
It's true.
And it just makes me think about hymens. It's unpleasantly biological.
Unpleasantly biological.
What a way.
That's the title of the episode. We found it.
Brilliant. I work for a biology department and I'm now quite concerned I will describe something as unpleasantly biological.
I don't think you should be concerned about that. I think that sounds good.
Depends who I describe it as that too. My bosses would love it.
Hopefully. Maybe.
Yeah.
If you want to workshop your idea, Dom, you can just keep talking until you pick.
No, I think I've got. I was trying to think while you were debating, and I think I've got one. In the name of the fully consumed scenery this week, it's got to be the Dreams of Conquest of the week.
Yes. Iconic.
Mainly because, good. Just of all the sheer bounding energy that man brought to the role, combined with Tom Baker as well, being like, as Four usually is, scenery eating. There's practically nothing left for anybody else.
The reason the sets are so cheap is they had to rebuild it after they ate the first one.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why it looks a little dodgy sometimes. That's why they could only afford one corridor.
Six Degrees of Blake Seven, which is a segment.
Oh. Everybody's
it's a
favorite segment.
In which I connect with my giant puzzle pieces and pieces of string, Blake Seven to classic Doctor Who. This week it's super easy. It's technically 2 degrees. I mislabeled this one. So Tom Baker once hosted an episode of the TV show Science Fiction titled Sherlock Holmes and the Case of the Missing Link with Paul Darrow playing Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. So that's a Blake Seven degree of two. I also earlier today looked up Paul Darrow clips from Time Lash. Just for my own
amazing,
just for my own education, and everyone's always like, Paul Darrow's terrible in this. I think he's incredible. At one point, he tries to send Four off, not Four. He's trying to send Six off in the Time Lash, and he says, "Unpleasant journey, Doctor." I love Paul Darrow. Played Kerr Avon, for the listeners who don't know Blake Seven as intimately as I do, even though I haven't watched all of it yet.
Well, the fun thing is, I've only really just started watching it myself.
Yeah, same. And it's good.
Yeah, I've been finding it really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's bleak, but very good.
I haven't started it yet because I don't think I could deal with any bleak media.
Yeah, that's fair. Just, as I say every time, I just love when Avon says, money is the only reality.
I was just going to say, I've been introduced to Serverland for the first time recently.
Oh, wow. Sexy.
And wow, she's truly something. That's all I can say.
All right, so now we rank it out of 5 somethings. Unfortunately, we're not allowed to rank it out of 5 Nymons, because as we know, there's only one.
Oh my goodness.
There is one Nymon.
I think I'd probably give it 2.5 best dog rosettes out of 5.
Oh, good one. Good one. I would give it 2 of Romana's gloves out of 5. They're very good gloves. And there are only 2 of them.
I would probably get, I mean, from the perspective of entertainment, it's a full 5 out of 5. But as a story, I give it just the solid 2 Nyman horns.
Yes. Good.
Laser hormones. Because
they have two each.
Yeah.
Very good. So now we go to our overall ranking. So the way that we rank these, at the moment we have Battlefield at the top and the Twin Dilemma at the bottom. So if you think it's better than Battlefield or worse than Twin Dilemma, we'll already be there. But...
oh my god.
It's better than Twin Dilemma.
It is better than Twin Dilemma.
I mean, that, yeah, it's not too much of an effort.
The bar is low.
Yeah, low-hanging fruit.
I think I'd probably put it between Marinus and Cybermen. Go on, make your case.
Well, it's more that I would just rather watch Tomb of the Cybermen, despite everything we've discussed about it, because I like two more than four. But I don't know that that's an objective quality thing.
I enjoyed watching this more than I enjoyed watching Tomb, because I thought four was really fun in it.
That's fair. Dom, what do you think? Break this tie.
Oh, so... oof. I really enjoyed it, though, as an entertainment perspective, but it is, but from a production perspective, it's pure crap. So
yeah, we try to be vaguely objective, but only vaguely.
Oh, my goodness.
AIM said between Marinus and Cybermen, whereas I would say between Cybermen and Destiny of the Daleks.
Oh, wow, you really didn't. You didn't think much of Keys of Marinus after all. Okay.
I liked Keys of Marinus.
Fine.
It's just that the other one... I argued for Keys of Marinus over Traken, but AIM overruled me by reminding me that Nyssa was in Traken.
And I think I won.
Did win, however.
I did win.
However, I still like Marinus more because I love Ian and Barbara, as we know.
Hmm. That's interesting. Okay. I would say it's more entertaining for me than... But then again, this isn't fair!
we can
Welcome
still
to what we do every week.
We can argue with you afterwards.
I love that you got Tomb of the Cybermen bad because of the racism. Twin Dilemma, worse, but not racist.
Well, that was the novelization specifically.
Ah, the novelization Dragon Day. I see.
I mean, Tomb of the Cybermen is also... extremely racist, as we discussed in our episode about it.
The Twin Dilemma sounded like the worst novelization.
It's just that the Twin Dilemma is significantly worse in every way except that it's not racist. So it's kind of tricky.
You know what? I'm going to slam it between Keys and Tomb.
Okay, let's put it in there then.
Cool.
And then I'll look it up on the Doctor Who Magazine Mighty 200 poll.
I assume we'll be near 200.
Last week I managed to correctly guess where the Seeds of Death was going to be, so I'm going to try and do that
again.
And
it was very impressive.
Where do we think the Horns of Nymon is going to rank out of 200 stories?
Oh, I'd rage about, what, 199?
Well, Twin Dilemma is 200, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on where...
172.
Yeah. I'm going to say 180, and then we'll find out. 189!
189, nice.
Below Megalos and above the Space Museum, which people apparently really don't like. I've never seen it.
Oh god, I have to watch the Space Museum for another podcast this week. I'm interested. This is going to be interesting.
Wow, you're just podcast wall to wall.
Oh, yeah. It happens.
But yeah, 199 is Time Lash, as it happens.
Oh, I see. That does make sense.
And then Time in the Rani, and then Underworld, and then Time Flight, and then the Space Pirates, and then the Underwater Menace.
Oh my god.
I think some of them are that people hadn't seen them, and some of them are recency bias, but other than that...
Yes, fair. Isn't number one something like... is it still Caves? Is number one Caves?
Well, number one is Caves. Yeah, Caves. Two is Blink, three is Genesis, and then four is Wang Chiang, so like...
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Doctor Who fandom, why are you like this?
Yeah. When was this poll? Was it out of 200? I'm assuming 2009? Yeah, 2009. There, yeah, makes sense.
They had the new series as well, so the first three series of New Who, I think.
That'd be 2009. That would be just up to Planet of the Dead.
God, it's been a long time. Haven't rewatched that one in a while.
Neither have I, no.
It wasn't really a specials head, so to speak.
I mean, they are divisive. The Tenant specials are divisive.
I remember enjoying
them. I only really like one, The Waters of Mars. Because I found it was extraordinarily
good. Yeah, that's the one I remember most.
End of Time, not for me. Planet of the Dead, also not for me. Next Doctor, not for me.
Amazing. It's almost like they weren't very good.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on who you ask. I mean, loads of people hold the end of time in high regard. I think it's self-indulgent tripe, but no one told you that.
Yeah,
but
that's all right, because I also think it's self-indulgent tripe. Don't worry about it.
Excellent.
I think it's enjoyable self-indulgent tripe.
All right. So let's finally move on to the outro, which begins with Dominic's self-promo time. So if there's any socials you want people to follow stuff to promote, please let us know.
Sure. So if your dear viewers are interested, they can follow me on Twitter at DominicJGM, on Instagram at Dominus of Time, which fun fact, I came up with that because nice. Dominus is Latin for Lord, and I was just being funny.
Intriguing.
Or pretentious. There's a fine line between the two. My YouTube channel is WhoChaser, and on there I'll be doing all sorts of stuff like how-to cosplays and cosplay tutorials of various Doctor Who characters and various bits about episodes and whatnot. And I in terms of creative stuff as well, I'll be doing my own audio series, fan audio series, Doctor Who Remnants, and I'm currently starring in a Doctor Who fan film series by the production team DW2012. To come out later. Amazing. The first episode is already out, but because of, you know, the pandemic and everything, we had to take a halt. Yeah. So hopefully we'll be getting back to it later this year.
Sounds cool.
Just a couple of things.
Yeah, just a few. I keep myself busy.
Whose turn is it to do the outro?
I think if I intro, you outro.
Yes, okay. So, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Reversing Polarity, a Doctor Who podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at PolarityPod or on Tumblr at polaritypod.tumblr.com, where we post rad memes and episode notes, along with other Doctor Who gift sets that I consistently reblog if I remember to do so. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Even if you don't listen on there, it really helps with people discovering the podcast. And feel free to come and join us in however long until next time. We might have changed the posting schedule by now. We will be talking about the third Doctor serial, The Demons.